culture.
What's up, Gamer Nation? Welcome back to another episode of the Popstar Podcast. My name is Grayson Hamilton, and I'm always happy to have you guys here, but especially for this special podcast, because we have someone with us on it who's I'm a huge fan of. Robert McCallum is here, who is a writer and director of last month's very entertaining documentary, Nintendo Quest. For everyone out there, this is a excellent, actually, nerd adventure is the best way I like to call it. Jay Bartlett, you followed Nintendo enthusiast Jay Bartlett on his quest to capture every single Nintendo cartridge that was ever released. That's 678 NES titles. And of course, the rules are very simple, is that no deal can be made online. This every single title must be found through friends, shop owners, other collectibles. And joining with us is of course, Robert McCallum, the writer and director and good friend of Jay Bartlett. Robert, this documentary for gamers out there, and especially for someone as a fan of as I am, was a fantastic film. It's always an honor to have you here. How are you?
Oh, thanks, man. That's quite the lovely introduction. And you can just call me Rob. I'm pretty chill and down to earth. We don't have to get so formal just yet anyways.
Okay. All right. Well, Rob, I just want to start off. Where did this idea come from? How did you guys end up wanting to go on this road trip?
There's a bunch of different routes that this whole thing begins, and I do apologize for your listeners. They will hear Canadian accent from time to time as I say out and about on the road, but that just makes us that much more nerdy, right?
Absolutely.
So Jay's been my best friend for 30 years, and like Jay, I'm a huge collector, really into He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, big gamer. You know, so him and I have always collected everything, whether it's comic books, action figures, even sports cards, and I wanted to document the whole collecting process. But as I'm sure you and your listeners know, that could be a lifetime because sometimes those pieces are just impossible to find. Sometimes people aren't super dedicated. And I said, you know, what if I gave you a month, Jay, to get the one collection that you've always wanted, the one collection you've always dreamt of owning? And he said, what, like an NES collection? I'm like, yeah, I dare you to get the entire set. Because like every kid, you know, back in the day, we'd go to Toys R Us, we'd look up at the aisles, and we'd see all the different options up there. And why did we just have to pick one? Why? You know, so Jay had the dream, the vision to walk into his game room and not have to kind of choose or not have any gaps in his collection. He wanted to be able to kind of play them all. So I said, all right, man, if you want it that bad, I dare you to do it. How far are you willing to go for your dream? What are you going to let get in the way? And the result is Nintendo Quest.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of fun. You guys go through a huge road trip in and out of Canada and U.S., going to a lot of different enthusiasts, a lot of different collectors. And for to document it, it's really – Jay's a really down-to-earth guy, and this is one thing that I truly liked was as a fellow gamer, I could really see myself and see the penchant for the passion through Jay. I mean, he's a bit reserved guy, and seems like he might be a little uncomfortable at times going through this journey, but you can also tell, you can see the passion of what he's doing and why he's doing it. For you, being a longtime friend, what were the difficulties and the challenges of filming this, particularly involving the personal element to it? Do you think having Jay there helped a lot in the emotional level, or did you see it more just as a documentary itself?
Well, this was always going to be a personal journey for me, and when I envisioned it, it maybe was a little bit more 50-50 in terms of how much we chronicle the Nintendo culture and the legacy behind the NES specifically, but as Jay's journey started to unfold, it became very apparent to me and the crew that there's much more of a personal through line here. We could really make a film about a guy deciding to go for his dreams and see how far he could get within 30 days, and of course, the flip side of that is the real hook for me was not whether he did it in 30 days, but how the human condition responds to that. Mm-hmm. You know, how is he going to respond to that success or failure? And where is he going to be 6 to 8 months after achieving his dream? Because I think that's a really big question. If we get what we want because we've gone through hell and back, who are we going to be later in the future as a result? So I know a lot of people say they like the 6 to 8 months later section the most because they can see how much Jay has changed. Given how what has happened since the 30-day journey, whether he had succeeded or failed. Again, no spoilers. the hardest part, man, to be completely honest, is the fact that I was both the filmmaker and the friend. Where as a friend, I wanted to help him, but as the filmmaker, I had to, you know, stick him in the spotlight and poke him with a stick. You know, like, you know, dance, monkey, dance. We need to kind of entertain the masses. And you really touched on it, right? Because for Jay, it's a tug of war between the passion inside him for the NES and his sense of exposing himself, you know, not getting caught up into it, not risking himself, not being vulnerable to the circumstances that are surrounding the challenge. So he's negotiating that. I'm negotiating the filmmaker-friend dynamic. So there's a lot of interesting conflicts at play, and it results, like you said, is kind of like the ultimate 8-bit road trip, as we like to call it.
Absolutely. One thing that I think kind of surprised me, and I wanted to ask you about it,
sure.
Because as the plot suggests, 678 titles. So even if each title were the same amount and it'd be cheap, it's still kind of, I mean, it's kind of an expensive undertaking. And of course, something of a surprise is some of these titles are more rare than the others. Can you tell us, were there any really shocking things involving when you guys spoke to certain collectors and finding out, did you know how expensive certain things were going to end up being as opposed to others?
Yeah, and I should clarify for everybody listening, 678 is the number of official release
official
games.
Official release, yes.
Yeah, there are some unlicensed games. Tengen had the black cartridges, of course, and there were some by Color Dreams and other ones. But 678, the official seal, Nintendo seal, is what we were after. And that doesn't include Nintendo World Championships or crazy contest cards. As far as what our expectations were and what Jay knew what he was getting into, we were pretty well aware. I mean, there's going to be a lot of variance, and we found actually what was most shocking on the price front is that, you know, something like the double cart, the Mario Duck Hunt 2-pack that most of us, you know, was our first game, that would be like $5, like around our hometown, but, you know, in other places it was like 15 or 20.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we found like a huge regional discrepancy, and there's a lot of variance in that way. But when it came to like the bigger titles, like a DuckTales 2 or a Rescue Rangers 2, they were all, you know, within 10% of one another. And 10% is, you know, a really comfortable markup that you can negotiate when you're buying in bulk, as Jay did. And I'm sure the other thing you noticed, man, was, you know, we don't really focus a lot on the monetary side or the price of this. And that really just goes to really further strengthen the personal journey that this is, and the fact that it's about the games and the culture and not about what the price was in 2013 when we filmed, which is already drastically out of date because of where that culture is going. So I know some people wanted to know more about the price of some of the stuff, and a lot of the prices are there, but the reality is, because Jay was buying these in bulks of 25 and 50, and at one point he bought 115 games in one store, it would just be really hard to kind of identify what each game was worth.
Yeah. Actually, that does bring up one of the interesting aspects, was the hat was kind of, Jay at certain times has to do a little bit of haggling. And I wanted to know how you guys felt about that. We all know that aspect of doing kind of a haggles when it comes to cars or, you know, buying homes and things like that. But this was, you know, real enthusiast, retro shops and doing a lot of price debating. But I mean, it was really interesting to me to see how Jay handled it, because I personally felt like you could see him, like a skill, how he kind of got better and better each venture into it. And did you expect to see that happen so quickly in 30 days?
Well, this is going to be kind of funny, all right? Now, I haven't really addressed this specifically on any interview or any of the press that we've done, so this is kind of fun for me that I get a new question. Day two, we go to the first retail locations, and it's just a pawn shop in our town. And, of course, those guys, you know, haggle for a living. They got to get the best price so they can put it on the shelf and turn a buck. It wasn't really until then that I realized that Jay has never, ever really haggled.
Like ever.
So that's why you see me like really kind of being the sidekick in that first scene, saying, you know, well, there's the sticker price and then there's the cash price, you know, like giving like the very basics to like how negotiation goes. But of course, as you see by, you know, day 27, 28, 29, 30, he's, you know, picked up on the basics and gone into the advance, and he's, you know, going off the confidence that he's had that he's earned over the, you know, the days leading up to that. So it wasn't something that I expected to see, at least in that drastic of an arc, because I thought he was at least a little bit more novice. I wasn't expecting him to be as green in the skills of negotiation and haggling, but it makes it for that much better of a story, that somebody can start off with like next to little skills, knowing, you know, what you should do, but without the practice, it's cool to see, you know, literally baptism by fire, right?
Oh, definitely. Now, I know you mentioned earlier that, yeah, for Jay, this is the ultimate collection, the end-all be-all that he wanted to get, which is all for NES. For you personally, being a huge collector, the NES signifies more than just, I would personally say that the NES genre serves more than just another collection, and you do kind of touch on it of how this particular set means more to you than some of the other generations. And I wanted to ask you, is it, I mean, does the NES, is that really your all-time favorite console, or is it more just about what that console did specifically for gaming industry?
I think it's both, man. It's hard to say one without the other. And, even kind of divorcing yourself from the nostalgia of growing up in that era and having that system impact you and really make me the gamer and storyteller that I am today. If it wasn't for Final Fantasy, I probably wouldn't be a filmmaker and storyteller. But it's the library of games that said, no, gaming can be different. It doesn't necessarily have to be so high score driven. We can actually tell a story. We can have goals. We can have character development. We can take you, the player, on an adventure and get you to think about things in different ways. We can actually get you to care about these things on screen that you're controlling. And gaming hadn't really done that to any vast extent before. Gaming before then, I feel, acknowledged the player rather than, the player through the character as an avatar. So it's just such a big, leap in terms of how you think about gaming that makes it that important. And then once people realized that that's what you could do in gaming, then the imagination, was, unlimited. What if we did this? What if we did this? And then you get to see all these titles that go in 1,000 different directions. And if you look at gaming nowadays, it's quite the antithesis of that. Gaming is so restricted to, like, I don't know, three or four different lines of thinking. It's not the unbridled imagination that it used to be. There are no developers taking chances on what could be fun or zany. I mean, James Portnow in Nintendo Quest says, if you went into an office today and pitched a game about a plumber who jumps on turtles and eats mushrooms, you'd get laughed. Yet, of course, we're talking about Super Mario Brothers, probably the most recognizable video game character of all time and one of the most successful franchises. So
Absolutely.
why is that the current state of affairs? And how many other landmark franchises started in the NES era that are still beloved by gamers new and old today? So many. It all started in the NES era.
Absolutely. Now, I do want to ask, you're heavily now in the filmmaking industry, but I do want to ask, are you still a gamer? Do you and Jay still try and find times to play together, or have you kind of taken a step away from the gaming industry?
Oh no, I could never get away from gaming. It's my one and only kind of outlet to get away from making films, and yet when I'm playing, I'm still thinking like a filmmaker, especially with the offerings today that are so cinematic and so narrative driven. I was out picking up Tomb Raider, the definitive edition for PS4, because it was on sale at Best Buy, right? So looking forward to putting that in to tide myself over until the new Uncharted comes out. And so it
You just
just
answered my next question. I was going to ask you, what are you playing right now? But
I well that's I just finished Blood Bowl 2, the campaign on that. Huge fan of that. I got Hard West on the queue, and I'm dying for XCOM 2.
of course,
So
I really enjoyed XCOM. That was a great one.
oh man, I can't wait for the sequel. Hard West, you got to check it out if you haven't played it yet. It's essentially XCOM set in the wild supernatural West.
I'm gonna have to check it out.
There you go.
Before we get out of here, Rob, I know you, since you're a filmmaker, are you thinking or are you planning of doing any kind of another documentary about the gaming in the future, or is it something that maybe you take a step away from for a little bit or maybe come back? Is there any kind of teasers you can give us?
I got a ton of things that I can tell you about in terms of what I'm involved with as a filmmaker. First, the next film, I'll try to go in order of anticipated release. The next one is me kind of going on another ultimate road trip, so to speak, and kind of trying to find my dream. And that's I hit the road with my brother to see if we can find my mom, who's been missing for almost 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that comes out on Mother's Day. It's called Missing Mom. Anybody that wants to check out the trailer can go to missingmomdoc.com. That trailer is up. After that, I believe the documentary on heavy metal band Kitty, which is from my same hometown as Jay and I, that'll come out. That's documenting their 20-year legacy in heavy metal. They've like co-headlined Ozfest and met every awesome rocker you can think of, and they just have a really unique story that I can relate to. So that's cool. We have a Kickstarter for a documentary on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe that should go live in January, so another passion project of mine. And the last one is video game related that I can announce. It's on the cover art for gaming, so all the box art stuff, and it's, you know, appropriately named Box Art, a gaming documentary. And if you want to kind of follow us on that, go to boxartdoc.com. Facebook pages for all this stuff are up as well.
That's a number of amazing projects, and I think they're going to be phenomenal. I wish you luck on all of them.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Again, Robert McCallum, filmmaker, Nintendo Quest is the documentary, came out in this past summer with Jay Bartlett. If you are any sort of nerd out there, if you are a fan of video gaming and you really want to see some of the best that gaming history has to offer, definitely pick this up and watch it. It's fun, it's down to earth, it's relatable, it's everything I think a lot of gamers out there would really appreciate. Robert McCallum, thank you again, bud. It's such a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm very happy you could join us today.
No worries. I appreciate you having me. If anybody does want to pick up that documentary, Nintendo Quest, all they have to do is go to NintendoQuest.com. We made it dead simple, and we also just released a companion web series where we drop a new episode every month called the Nintendo Quest Power Tour that features Jay and I touring the film across North America throughout the summer. So two episodes are up, third one coming up soon. It's a lot of fun, and it's free.
That's the best thing you could ever hear, right?
There you go.
Rob McCallum, thanks again for joining us. Everyone out there, this is the Pop Czar Podcast. My name is Grayson Hamilton saying, hey, we'll see you on the next level.